You are listening to episode 181 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, a little bit of feedback on touching the new watch. Welcome to episode 181 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is the Ides of March, 2015. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and my brother from the same mother is James Furlough.
Yeah, that's right. I am from the same mother, and she had a birthday today, huh?
Yep, that's the significance of that introduction.
That's right. Happy birthday, Mom.
It's true.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Mom. Also, the Apple Watch got announced this week.
Dude, so I got an Apple Watch. I have one. Do you want to see it?
Yeah.
I'm going to be totally jealous. Here it is, right here.
Ooh, it looks just like one.
Wait. I got to, like...
I can't see it. It's not resolving.
Here. Hold up. I'm gonna do this.
Yeah, turn up your settings, buddy.
No. I got this. Here it is. Can you see that?
Whoa. Oh.
It's my Apple Watch. So there's a Pebble app that I think they call it Mac Watch officially. But essentially it's the old school, think like almost original Mac. Probably it's more like around the 6.0 OS X. But it's got a window open that says clock on it. It's got one item, it has a date on there, and it shows the time, and then it has a couple icons underneath. The finder shows the clock that is open, and then a trash underneath, and it's got the Apple icon and file edit view. I mean, it's just like old school Mac style.
Like, yeah, it's awesome.
Pretty fun.
That's very cool.
So that's what that would be the cover of our podcast, by the way.
Oh yeah, nice. Oh, of course. Yeah.
But there you go. There's my Apple Watch. I got one. I'm good to go.
That's very cool.
How about you? You got your Apple Watch?
I don't. Okay. No, not all right. Yet. All right. I would have if I could have, but I can't, so I didn't.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So that happened this week, man.
It did. But we got to do our intro.
I'm going to say, I know. See, this is the thing. Usually this is where we talk about whatever is going on in pop culture and stuff. And I want to give us a little bit of time here, just like let it hang to see if there's anything we want to talk about. Or do we just plow ahead? This is just that big of a week.
I think it's that big of a week. And it's 9:50 in the evening because you went to dinner with our mom. And
yeah, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. Yeah. My new girlfriend got a better gift than I did for our mom.
Really?
Yeah.
You gonna tell me what it is, or just hanging there?
So I didn't get one. I got a card. She got a box of chocolates.
And
I just, you know... she told me what she was doing. She asked me if she wanted to make it for both of us. I was like, no, it's from you. It's awesome. It's really cool. In retrospect, I'm not sure how I feel like it looked, but
that's right.
But she got to suck up. That was
you
important.
Did better than me. I sent her a text message at 6 o'clock this morning. It's like, so happy birthday.
So
and then she texted me back and was like, oh, thanks so much. See you at dinner at 6 o'clock. I was like, huh. And then she was like, You know how it goes, like 3 seconds later. Oh, sorry, wrong person. It's like, I wonder which part. No. The dinner? I didn't push it. I didn't want to know.
I gotcha. You know what, James? But we're not here to talk about that sort of thing this week. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about the Apple Watch and the continuing corporate opera. By that we mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, the watches they're making, their marketing campaigns, and of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of this show, where we're talking about the Apple Watch, James has got a short disclosure he wants to throw away.
I do not work for Apple, but I wish that I did work for Apple. Instead, I work continuously, nonstop, for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
That was a...
We're just going to let that go.
An enigma. I have a disclosure as well. Oh. I don't work for Apple, but they work for me. Because I am an owner.
Me too. I own and share.
That's almost as good as me. I own three of them.
I'm down $4.
I almost...
That's lame.
Yeah, they've not been doing too well this week. I'm going to be honest, James.
It's the way that works.
Yeah. I want it actually to come down just a little bit more, though, so I can... I've got $122.94.
That's not just a little bit.
Dollars.
That's like a lot.
No. That's how much I got in buying power. They are currently at $123.59. So if they fall a whole nother dollar, I can buy a fourth share and then ride that rocket to the top. I know. So I'm actually hoping it comes down a little bit more. But I could just throw another $5 into that account, but then it feels different.
I don't know.
That's
part of the game. I gotcha.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's my disclosure. I'm hoping there. My disclosures are hoping the stock that I own don't listen to me when I say this product is awesome. It's going to sell really well.
Well, I mean, the ironic part, if you really, really think about it, is that they're a dividend-paying stock. And so you actually want the price to go down because it makes, it cheaper to buy more stock, and then B, your yield is actually better. So a lower price is actually good.
Exactly.
Doing it for dividends. That's what I was saying.
Yeah.
Totally.
What was I going to say? Something about... Oh, so if you want to know more about the show, know more about us, we're all over the internet. It's this large... It's a system of pipes that are all connected together through nodes, a.k.a. routers. You want to check that internet out, where we are specifically, you can go to the Twitter, at Matthew D. Furlow is where I'm at, or Instagram, where there's really good pictures of me. And that's my Instagram is NextWiggin4. Two G's. And
I am James Furlow on Twitter, jamesfurlow.com, and a bunch of other places.
And if you want to know more about the show in general, specifically different podcasts, our backlog, all the articles we'll be talking about this week, links to the audio, if you want the podcast, links to the video, all that sort of good stuff, go to furloughbros.com, tell a friend, set it up in a chain mail. We'd appreciate it.
Chain mail. Remember those days?
That is one benefit of
Facebook. We don't have chain mail anymore.
It is solid benefit of, yeah. Yeah. People can yell into the cacophony of...
I think
of,
we did.
Yeah, it's easier to ignore.
That's true.
Honestly.
Well, and it's more secure. And, it always used to bug me when people would forward it, and I'd be like, dude, my email was in there. Come on.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like, because it was just, that always bugged me.
Yeah, I know what and who you are talking about. So let's just, we usually like to softball these shows and start out with something.
Warm up.
Not necessarily, yeah. Warm up. So today's warm up, this is a really cool jump drive in the sort of way that engineers think things are really cool. But, casual people don't. So you've heard about the jump drives that you plug them in and they'll load viruses onto your computer. They believe Stuxnet, the virus that blew up that nuclear refinery in Iran, was transmitted via USB. Yeah. So USB is notoriously damaging. You can shut down computers in all sorts of ways. But there was an engineer who decided to take it one step further. It wasn't good enough, in his opinion, to just wreck the software. You wanted to be able to wreck the computer itself, render it permanently unusable. And so he designed this little circuit that will fit into the package of a standard USB drive. So when you pick it up, it looks just like a USB stick. If you plug it into your computer, you won't know the difference until it's too late. And basically what it does is it so power comes from your computer or comes from USB at 5 volts. This thing has got a series of capacitors and other circuitry. It does a DC to DC conversion where it takes your 5 volts and it turns it into a negative 110 volt potential. At negative 110 volts, it charges those capacitors. The capacitors become super saturated with all sorts of electrons floating around them. And then once it hits the saturation point, there's a transistor on this thing that turns off the power incoming, flips the switch to the 2 data pins, and then allows, with no resistance, all 110 volts to charge out of the capacitors and into the data pins on your computer. This is really, really, really bad for your computer. this is how you blow computers up, especially considering the fact that most computers nowadays, the USB is hardwired directly to the CPU. There's not a separate card. So you'd be hitting the main CPU, the main motherboard, with negative 110 volts. And at that voltage, there's all sorts of protections to prevent you from doing exactly what you're doing here.
Is negative volts only antimatter in Star Trek?
Okay. No. So if you have a battery and you flip it upside down, you are now applying the same voltage but as a negative. It's just a reverse flow. And what's important about this is that there's diodes in all of your circuitry to prevent too much electricity from going in or electricity going the wrong way. But once you get to a high enough voltage, it doesn't matter anymore. It just powers through.
Gotcha.
And pretty much. And so this thing is it's designed to just overload all the protection circuitry in your computer and blow up your main CPU. And as soon as it completely discharges, that little transistor that was acting to switch to power, it flips back off. And as long as there's still power to your bus, so if you have a battery or if it's still plugged in, it'll recharge and do it again and hammer your computer again until the whole thing actually blows up. Yep. And it looks just like a normal old jump drive. So if it's like thrown into your bag or if it's just sitting on a counter, it's awesome.
Don't use it. Wow. Mm-hmm. I feel like this would work pretty well in the spy world. It's like a James Bond thing.
Yeah. The nice part about it is that it's a time bomb. You know, they talk about if you can get physically close to your to the target computer. Like I read in a forum somewhere, somebody just said, you know what else works really well? A hammer. I mean, if you can get that close, why not just use it? Well, and you're like, yeah, that's legitimate. But the nice part about this is, number one, it's sort of will go from computer to computer, blowing them up as it goes along until people realize what it is. But B, it's got a time to delay. You know, it's you like all USBs. You're talking about physically destroying the CPU from afar. All it has to do is be plugged in, and it from the outside, nobody would know, and yet it's. It's doing its magic.
That's cool, man.
It's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things where it's just kind of weird and cool.
Yeah, I like that.
So of the Apple keynote for this next part, or do we want to...
Yeah, let's do... Let's just talk Apple. I mean, we know we want to. I mean, clearly we're Apple fanboys, and I always feel weird where it's like we're gonna dedicate an entire show to this, and we're not.
Yeah,
Google or Microsoft or Amazon, but I think that's okay.
Yeah, you know, in all fairness, you know, yeah. Well, in all fair, yeah, it's a little. I mean, we regularly give half to three quarters of a show to one of Apple's competitors.
That's
fair. Not necessarily flattering as it's.
Fanboy fest. That's cool. That's cool. Whatever. I guess all that to say, you've been warned. This next piece will be highly unapologetic. I don't know about you, but I know where my where I'm sitting on it all. But
I am not without criticism. Okay. I will say that.
Cool. Well, I will do my best to take all of that away. But so I think we should go in the order of what they talked about, which was TV, MacBook, watch.
Okay. You want to go on, or should I?
I care less about the TV.
Okay, let's talk about the TV. I actually think it's kind of a big deal because it's not necessarily... So two things happened. Number one, Apple dropped the price of the Apple TV down to $69. And they did that for a couple of reasons. Number one, they can. The Apple TV hasn't seen an update in forever, much to people's annoyance. Which means just Moore's Law is bringing down the cost of the internals, and it's cheaper to build it, so it's cheaper to... They're selling it for cheaper. That being said, last week we didn't get around to it from the mobile conference, but Valve announced Steam Link, which is a Android-based Wi-Fi repeater type thing that allows you to do remote video game playing. So you can like have your really powerful computer running the video game, and it will work on any TV. But it also does Android apps and that sort of stuff. NVIDIA announced their Shield last week, which is another Android TV-based thing, designed specifically to compete against the likes of Amazon's Fire TV or Google's Nexus TV or pretty much the whole fleet of all of these devices coming out. But they all come out within the price range of between $69 and like $150. That's kind of the ballpark of these devices. So Apple was sitting right in the middle of it, and now they are sitting at the bottom of it again. So they're trying to make the Apple TV, you know, for once in their lives, they're basically taking price as a negative off the table. The problem is, and people pointed this out, and I think it's somewhat legitimate, is that it's starting to look a little long in the tooth. I think the UI, people complain about the UI. I don't get it. This doesn't bother me that much. But snappiness and performance, I do think that there is something to be said about that, that the Apple TV is moving a little bit slower than its similarly priced competition. But at the same time, it's not a heavy lifter. It's not supposed to be a heavy lifter, and it works fine for me. I use it all the time. I like it. And at a $69, I'm definitely thinking about getting another one just because I could use it. Huh. But the really big deal here is they signed the HBO Now officially was announced, $15 a month, as had been previously rumored. And it's going to come with most of the same content as HBO Go. Not all of it, but they didn't specify exactly what wasn't on it. All the big guns were there. Your Games of Thrones, your Silicon's Valley, you know, game shows amongst that sort of that caliber.
Sopranos, yeah.
Yeah. But, but the most important part about it was they have an exclusive launch partner with Apple TV. So if you iOS basically. So if you want HBO Now in April in time to be able to watch Games of Thrones, you have to have an Apple TV to do it.
That's cool. I mean, I don't know if it's enough to get people to be like, "Oh, absolutely." But, you know, I guess for $70 plus an extra 15 per month.
I don't think it's enough.
You're like, all right, I guess.
I think for a certain population, it'll move a couple more TVs. I think that's pretty hard to argue that that won't happen. But I think the really big deal about it is it's just a sign of the fact that Apple's finally decided to play ball with content. and try to slowly lock down exclusives. That's something that their competition has been working on and is excelling at, especially Amazon with their homegrown TV shows that are, you know, award winning and whatnot. And so this is a good move for Apple. It's something people have been talking about, that if Apple wants to make TV work, it's going to be about having tons of content, and specifically exclusive content meant to move hardware. And you know, they got enough money. It's kind of hard to believe that they haven't done it. The only reason they haven't done it yet is because their attention hasn't turned there. And it's not because they can't afford to make it happen. So it's kind of cool to watch this first go, at, you know, playing around with trying to get the big media content providers to sign exclusive deals with, you know, streaming deals for their device.
Yeah, from what I understand, there's really just one left, right? And that's just sports. They can get that.
It's, yeah. I mean,
they already have a lot of them, right? I mean, they've got MLB and hockey, I believe. I mean, they're obviously missing the big one, for America at least. But, yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting strategy, for sure.
Yeah.
I feel like they're still... I feel like, to bring it back to the hardware, like... It still, to me, is like, dude, this is going to be the home. This is going to be the hub for HomeKit. And come WWDC, if we don't see... We may see a new piece of hardware that just so happens to be $69. And, you know, and they were kind of like... priming us for it, but at the same time I feel like it's just gonna be a software update, and that would be okay, because they're like, yeah, the existing hardware is actually pretty good for what we want to do, and yeah, we're doing the content thing, that's gonna be great, but more importantly, we want this to be the hub for HomeKit that will work with your watch and with your phone and with your iPad and with your Mac. And by pricing this bad boy at $70, like you said, we're going to move some more units and we're going to have millions ready to go. And that's the part that'll be compelling to developers.
Yeah. I agree.
I don't know. That's what I saw. I was like,
to me, at this point, there's only one reason to do a hardware update, and that's to open up an SDK. I think the current generation, the current generation Apple TV couldn't run video games. Not really. Not the way that Apple would consider quality. And all of a sudden, it would bring the comparisons to the NVIDIA Shield and to Amazon Fire TV, and it just wouldn't even. It wouldn't even stand a candle. So my thought is, drop the price to $69, move a couple of pieces of hardware, you know, move a couple more pieces of hardware, do it, you know, synchronize it with HBO Now, kind of move that whole thing, and then in a couple of months, launch the Apple TV Pro, and which is
a, you know, people off, wouldn't it? I mean, because if you're planning on making that move, just don't say anything.
Well, yeah, except this is class. I mean, that it happens to Apple all the time. You know, with you go out and buy the phone, and then they launch a new, you know, new phone. Well, you know, they're about to launch a new. I was holding off on buying the computer, but you know, I don't know. I feel like that's a classic Apple move. It's hard for me to say that. I could easily see them come out with a new piece of hardware still, even after this announcement, and just say, dude, we gave you a price jump. We weren't ready to launch the new hardware, but we were definitely ready to lower the price so that this is a lower tier device.
But they do so without telling. To me, they're signifying we're not going to touch the hardware for a while. Otherwise, don't mention it. The fact that you bring it up and call it to people's attention, you go, okay, they're keeping it as it is for now.
I just think it was because I honestly think that it came down to Game of Thrones. HBO decided they wanted to. I would say this: if they were, I could totally see this thought where they wanted to do that. They wanted to make that announcement in June or whatever, you know, later in the year when they actually launch the new Apple TV prior to. Christmas, right? And then and so they were planning, because that's what they normally do, right? You lower the price of the current generation, add, you know, and announce the new hardware at the original price point or a higher price point. You know, they want to, if you create a completely new category with a completely higher price point, that's why they change the names of the MacBooks, for example, so that they can play with how they price it to keep it, you know, so they don't, you don't just feel like they're arbitrarily raising prices. Then the Apple TV, what you'll see is, you know, if that was their plan, and then HBO said we want to launch HBO now, and Apple said we want to do that with you, that sounds great, and HBO said okay, and we want to do it in time for Game of Thrones, and Apple said that's awesome, you're going to launch Game of Thrones in September so that you can launch it with our new hardware, and HBO said no, we're going to launch it in April.
I guess I still don't understand why you lower the price. Cool. Because again, it's that you're signaling. It's just not. I that would just upset me if I were like, oh, cool, they dropped the price, I go out and buy one, and then 2 months later, they announce a new one, and they're like, well, what the heck? Why'd you lower the price? Because you could have announced the HBO Go, and you could have left the price just as it was.
I just don't think it's that big of a deal. I mean, what if they launched HBO? You know, if you think about this, they launch HBO Go. You go out and buy HBO Now. You go out and buy a new Apple TV at $99, and then 2 months they come out with the new hardware and a price drop on the one that you just bought. You'd still be upset.
But that would be on me. It's not Apple calling my attention to it.
I don't know. I think I can see why it would be upsetting to you, but from Apple's perspective, I think they'd say we're not going to break so many hearts that, you know, there might be a few people that are a little.
I guess if they come out with new hardware and it's also still at $69, I guess it's, for me, it's the new hardware piece. You know, it's, and my guess is that it's not just going to have a snappier channel; it's going to enable some new functionality. I mean, that's. To me, that's
that's what I mean. I think what you do is the current generation works as a smart hub, but if you want video games,
And I'm not even thinking video games. You talk to Siri or whatever, better HomeKit integration or something. I don't know. It was weird to me. It says no new hardware for a while.
I can't believe that. I can't believe that they're gonna. Believe it. See, my problem is that if I actually had to bet, I would bet you're right, and that's frustrating, because at this point, it's become pretty obvious that the hardware is really lagging behind the other devices. The only thing that you can say about it is they're pricing it like it is. Premium alternative to these other devices, which is an acknowledgement of the fact of, yeah, it's not a premium alternative, which is so the antithesis of what Apple's about. Like, I just don't get it. And I realize, you know, we've talked about this before. There's this weird, like, they're all weak enough where they're not being compared to the PlayStation and the Xbox One. They're a distinct category of device. And if you make them powerful enough and you open up the SDK enough and you do enough, you'll blur that line and they'll suddenly draw comparisons to the PlayStation and the Xbox. And then you're in a world of pain because now Sony and Microsoft are going to come down like hammers because those are their flagship hardware products. Like, you know, Apple can't walk into that market thinking like they are right now. They can't keep the same attitude. They'd have to bring their A game, and they're not ready to do that with the PlayStation and the Xbox, I think for good reason. And I don't know. I get the feeling that they're just in this really weird spot, and they don't want to. They want the Apple TV to be what it is. They don't want to try with it. They don't want to. They've got some grand vision of what it could be, and they've never been able to put the pieces of the puzzle together in such a way that they feel like they could really sell it and compete against the Xbox.
Do you
and
also
the
get
PlayStation?
That sense that none of the execs watch television?
Yeah, that too.
You know, I mean, that's the sense that I get, where they're just like, we don't watch television. We don't have time for that. You know, obviously they listen to music and they do stuff on their you know, on the other devices, and it shows. And that just, to me, you just go, yeah, they don't.
Yeah, I think Steve Jobs watched movies. I think Steve Jobs loved a good movie, but I get the feeling that none of them, even Jobs,
well, they've got Jobs TV, being quoted as saying, like, I don't like television, I'm not that interested in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, they fully recognize that they're the weirdos, and the majority of people genuinely love television. And I think that they keep thinking, right, and about, like, you know, again, HomeKit, and, you know, kind of you're talking about the gaming stuff. And
yeah, and it's funny, it would be interesting to, I think it would be fascinating to see Apple decide to get into the video game realm and really decide to
I don't think they're in the video game realm. I mean, they're into developers and enabling them to create apps that, what? Some of them will be games, probably a lot of them. But they're also thinking, you know, in terms of communication, and they're thinking broader.
But I guess what my point is I think it would be interesting to, I think it would be really interesting to watch Apple try to really devote a piece of hardware and an SDK specifically to enable developers to build games. And I think it would be interesting to watch what Apple did with it. But I agree. I don't think,
well, think about the iPod Touch. And right? they go, that's a gaming device, and they've kind of let that one go.
Well, it was, I mean, the iPod Touch was so funny because they were caught by surprise. Like, we said it before they did. They were like, and they've admitted it in one of the keynotes. Even Steve Jobs said it really surprised us how many games were made. What? Anybody who's ever played video games,
well, again, knew it, what it surprised this is going to happen. Like, we so watched obvious. The development fall off. Because they're just like, eh.
Exactly.
Rather cell phones.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Whatever.
This is good. This is good. So, Apple TV. Boom, done.
Okay. Yeah. So, what did you think about
MacBook?
I don't know. What was next? The Apple Research Kit?
Yeah, we can talk about Research Kit.
It's cool.
I think that was awesome. You probably thought it was boring.
Oh, yeah. It's very cool.
I think that
not at all. I mean, it's
so did you watch that video of Jim Cramer, Mad Money? He had his 10th anniversary this week.
I did not watch it, but I heard about it.
It was really good. So Jim Cramer's taking phone calls. People are telling him, you know, congrats on 10 years or whatever. And I just saw the clip because I'm a weirdo like those guys. Well, I guess so. We know of one show that they watch.
Good point.
And he goes, all right, we got Tim in California. And he goes, hi, Jim. This is Tim, specifically calling from Cupertino, California. This is... and he's like, all right. And he's like, yeah, this is Tim Cook from Apple. And you could tell, like, Jim Cramer was like, whoa. No, you know what I mean? Like, you can see he was visibly like, you've got to be kidding me right now. You know, and the audience is like, yeah.
That's awesome.
And he goes, yeah, I just wanted to call and congratulate you on, you know, on 10 years. And, you know, that's so fantastic. And Jim Cramer's like, you've got to be kidding me. Are you serious? And like, and it took him, it was like an 8-minute clip, 8-minute interview, I guess. And it took him a few minutes to like, to collect and compose himself and be like, okay, I have an exclusive interview right now with one of the most powerful people in the world.
Yeah.
And he reached out to me. Okay, don't blow this, You know, and
Yeah. The hottest girl and the hottest cheerleader just said, so, what are you doing after school today? I don't know.
Yeah, and so so it was a great interview. And, you know, and they it was like a little bit little love fest, which is fun. And, yeah, it was great. But one of the things he asks Tim is he goes, all right, clearly you guys are in a ton of markets and you're kicking butt and taking names, doing really well. And, you know, you got the phone stuff going on. You've got computers, entertainment. He goes, you know, clearly you've got these markets that you're going after. And I mean, he even went and said, like, you know, there's rumors of cars and, you know, and other stuff. And he goes, Am I missing any big one here that you guys are specifically interested in? And like, and I expected the classic, like, oh, we don't comment on that. You know how like he never says anything? Yeah. No, that wasn't his answer. He goes, yeah, I think you're missing a really big one. And it's like, oh, all right. What is it? You know? And he goes,
Yeah. It's, well, since we're on the topic.
And he goes, I think it's like biotech research, essentially. He goes, that's a huge field. And he goes, we are at I don't remember the phrase he used, so I'll just use my own, but like a tectonic shifting moment right now where like there's a clear change. And it's been slowly happening over the last couple of years where he was like, for the longest time, to understand how your health was, you had to rely on third party people and systems to get that information. You know, you had to go talk to a doctor or whatever. And he's like, and we are transitioning to first party primary research type of stuff, where he's like, with these wearables, right, they can like tell you, are you healthy or not? And we're going like, he's like, yeah, sure. We start out with, you know, steps and activity and stuff like that. And that's super helpful. It's like, and products like the Apple Watch are taking that an even step further, where we can tell you where, you know, about yourself and put you in direct control of your health. And he's like, and that's fundamentally different than how it's been done before. He goes, and furthermore, we're providing, you know, we're giving that information to you real time, which is kind of what they talked about in the presentation. He goes, but then we're also with ResearchKit giving you the opportunity to share that information with other institutions that are actually doing like rigorous research studies, not just, oh, I want to be healthy. And he goes, and he mentioned this out on the show, and I don't know if it was the first place he did it, but it was the first place that I saw it, where, you know, he talked about like the impact that ResearchKit is going to have in that research arena, where he was like, you know, the Stanford has a cancer research study, and, you know, part of its newness and whatever, but he was like, they had, it was something crazy, like 11,000 people sign up in the first 24 hours for this study, and they're going to, you know, do some app thing, I don't know what, on their phone. And he was like, we talked to Stanford and they said like the equivalent of that would be to have them field studies across 50 different sites across the US for a year. He's like, and we got that in 24 hours. He's like, so we're heading into an era of rich real-time data sets. And he's like, and the learnings and what we're going to understand from the human body, we're going to look back and think it was, we'll go, wow, how did we ever choose to do that? You know? And so he was like, I think it's a huge deal and we're excited to continue to advance that part of the industry, the world, humanity.
Yeah. One thing I will say is one of the things I love about Apple is their ability to kind of come out of left field with things that it's the classic, you know, twist at the end of the movie. How did we not see that coming? One of the things we've been talking about over the last year and a half, with the rev up to the Apple Watch, is all the medical professionals that they've been hiring. And it was always trying, and we always looked at it through the lens of what cool features will the Apple Watch have, that will use somebody with this particular, you know, set of qualifications. And in retrospect, it's like, obviously we just didn't understand the product they were working on. They were building research kits. Like, that is so clear now in retrospect. And I think that's a testament to how many, you know, how serious they're taking this, that most of those hires didn't really make sense on the Apple Watch. They made sense on something much bigger, that the Apple Watch is one part of, and, you know, quantifying health as,
and by the way, this is the reason why I push back on them getting into the video game stuff and the TV, because I just sit there and go, this is what they care about. They believe this is a worthy cause.
I actually, as we were talking about it, I agree with you, and I think I'm going to get some pushback on this from most people that you would talk to about the next particular product we discuss. I think that is more of the same of movie. It's actually a movement away from simple consumption, as counterintuitive as that can be. But you know, Apple for a long time was about making consumption really, really, really super easy, fun, and enjoyable. And I think it's a nut that they feel like they've cracked. And it's not, you know, I don't know. I still think there's places to innovate, and a company like Apple could do that in a big way in those areas. But like you said, I think they know that, and they're saying, yeah, we don't care. It's not a big enough market. It's not a grand enough goal. It's, you know, video games are small beans. We'll let Microsoft have that.
Yeah.
Which I think the reality of it is, you know, Sony and Microsoft kind of agree.
Yeah, we'll take it. Because it's, I mean, and I think they would say it's not small beans. They would just say it's not our beans. You know, and yeah, they're still exactly. saying no. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But at least for now.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think by this point, I think if there was going to be a serious move into
about, like,
opening up an SDK and hardware for gaming, you would have heard of it.
Yeah, probably.
About it by
and
now.
And I also think about, like, think about their story and their founder. You know, they're like, if we only had better health equipment, could we have detected his problem sooner and saved his life? You know what I mean? I mean, there's like, that affects the way you work. You know, and the priorities.
Yeah,
that
I mean,
you put
in life. It came out this week that Tim Cook has one of the coolest levers in the world. It is an incredibly rare combination of genes that allows him to do two things. Number one, Steve Jobs has had a very rare blood type, and sort of the make when they're matching, like liver transplants and stuff. The one that Steve has was a very rare one. It just so happened that Tim Cook had the same profile, but he also had a liver that regrows at faster rates than normal. Well, he's got the genetic twitch that means he could give up half his liver and recover faster than most people could. And so he actually offered his liver, you know, part of his liver to Steve Jobs. And Steve ended up getting a full liver transplant from a car accident,
yeah.
You know, somebody who had deceased. I don't know how they died. It's interesting that, you know, it would be difficult to do something like that, have the man survive, and then end up dying anyways. Somebody that you thought you were was so important, so close, technically your boss, and you're willing to undergo a medical procedure like that, give up, you know, part of your flesh to try to save him because he's that important to you, have him end up die anyways. Yeah, you would spend a lot of nights asking the question, how do I stop that from ever happening again?
You know? Superman storyline.
That's interesting. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I mean, but seriously, I mean, that is, you know, that's serious. And the nice part about it for Apple is when they're trying to pitch that to, you know, various various financiers and stockholders, just so happens that the medical device industry is so it's something that they can get into that has a high, you know, high ceiling for the ability to raise money, you know, and to make money. And so, you know, I could see how they would look at something like that and see very few reasons to not try to get involved in it, which, you know, same reason why Google's getting involved in it. Google's not, you know, Google's doing the same thing for the same reason. I like the fact that health kits like open source and stuff, research kit, is open source. You know, the point being that they want Google to, they're hoping that Google will do what they did with WebKit, which is say, yeah, this is a good idea, adopt it, integrate it, take ownership of it, you know, or at least co-ownership of it, and then it can be supported as a giant open source project that is cross-platform, cross, you know, cross-research, cross-everything, and you know, Apple's pretty good at pushing pushing giant industry-wide standards when they want to, which we'll get back to in a minute.
Yeah. But yeah, that was Research Kit. I thought it was cool. I liked it. It was fun.
It was very cool. So,
the MacBook, conflicted, right?
Because I actually think, this is unfair to say, we already knew a lot about the Apple Watch. We didn't even expect a computer to get... Well, I mean, there was rumors that a new Air might get launched, but nothing specific. So I think simply because of the unknowns involved, it ended up being the most exciting product announced on Monday.
That's true.
Especially because we're learning all sorts of cool stuff about it, and they made some cool innovations into the MacBook. The return, the once in future king, as it were, of their computer lineup. It looks a little bit different than the last MacBook, though.
Jesse has one.
It's a. Oh yeah, yeah. Back in the day, they were plastic, right?
Apple lights up. It's great.
Now then, yeah. This one doesn't have the Apple doesn't light up anymore. It's too thin.
I thought, I mean, they described it accurately at the very beginning. And to be honest, I'm in shock at how many people missed what Apple did. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and they said it.
They said it. It's not even like I think Anantech did a great job of just like putting that nail in the coffin. Like, no. This is what they did.
What's so confusing about it is that I actually watched the keynote live, but missed that part because my boss wanted me to do real work during that period. It was awful. So I actually skipped that part until I came back and watched it this morning, just the MacBook. So I had to kind of piece it together from just looking at it. And then when I actually watched it, I was like, what? They said this is not meant for people today. This is meant for people. This is meant for the 5% of people of their user base that is already living in tomorrow. Like, they just came out and like, oh my gosh, it's so frustrating.
And they were like, we asked ourselves, what if you combined an iPad and a MacBook? What would you get? Anyway, this is it. And you look at it and go, it's an iPad with a keyboard. And with no touch.
Yeah. That's it. You're saying, and everybody's like, you know, it's like, this is, it's funny. This is the 12-inch MacBook or the 12-inch iPad Pro.
Totally.
That everybody's been talking about. Well, yeah. They launched it. They just didn't call it the iPad Pro. They called it the MacBook.
That's crazy. What my thought was. Oh, my gosh. I mean, because you looked at it and went from a, yeah, totally. I'm glad that we're on the same page here.
And the other thing about it is, and this is I really think that this was kind of missed too, is that people were really flustered by it. They're just like, it was amazing how many people were like vehemently angry about this. Like it was a betrayal of everything because they got rid of all the ports.
Did you see that YouTube video? The Apple engineer talks about the new.
Oh, laughing. Yeah.
So funny.
Yeah, I liked the fact that even Mac Daily News it tipped the hat and actually like linked the video and said funny. It's funny. We'd forgot to mill out the ports. There's only one port on it.
just that laugh is so funny. So I showed it to Jessie. Yeah. And I was like, Jess, you gotta watch this. This is hilarious. Yeah. And she couldn't watch it because she was like, he's talking about like sandals on the beach. I don't understand. And I was like, No. No. Read the words. She's like, okay. And yeah, it was.
The TechCrunch link that I read actually said specifically, this isn't funny if you understand Spanish. You won't get it. Like, it's hard because he's. Yeah, because it does. The story doesn't make sense. No.
Just focus on the words. Don't listen to him, and just enjoy the laugh, because that's the funny part. I thought that was an awesome mashup. Very good. Yeah, but in that video, he's like, just one port. Oh my gosh. And he's like, we got rid of the glowing Apple logo. We downgraded the webcam, you know, to save some money. I can't remember. There was another one. He's like, oh yeah, and we're gonna sell all these dongles for $79 now. Oh man, we're gonna make a ton of money. And they're just laughing at, you know, at all of them.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah. It's like, and it's gonna be gold.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I did have a conversation with somebody, and we were talking about it, and they commented on the fact is, it's an $80 dongle just so you can output video. And I sat there and I went, they just announced that the Apple TV is going to be $70. And they're like, what? I was like, they just announced that you're not supposed to use a dongle. It's specifically designed not to use dongles. They say it straight up. That's like that's one of the selling points, is that it doesn't need a dongle. It does everything else that you could possibly need it to do. It's supposed to – literally, the Apple TV is cheaper than the dongle on purpose. I really think that was an intentional – they priced it above the Apple TV so that when you walk in and say, I need a dongle – the customer service person says, you know, a dongle is a good idea. They're right here. But let me just say this, ask this question really quick. Maybe what's better is Apple TV, and you can stream what you need to stream if you need to. It has all these other features. You know, it'd be very nice. I mean, if you need the dongle so you can, you know, transport it with you, the Apple TV is the same size, but I get it, you know. and it's like, they put together everything that's needed in order to have the Apple TV be the only dongle you need. And you know, I realize that it's not a perfect solution, which is why they built the dongle, is because there are going to be a certain number of people and applications where you do need the portability and the output. But I think by and large, they expect you just buy you shouldn't need a dongle for your when you're at home. Just set up your monitor with an Apple TV and AirPlay to your Apple TV.
I think they're like, you may not even. So I know from my emotions that I went through, and maybe this will help, was like, I saw it and went, oh man, I want one, you know, because it genuinely looks awesome, you know, and with all the different features that they had, and I wanted one for about 5 minutes, and then went, no, I want the MacBook Pro. That's the one that would be right for me. If I were to actually get one, which I'm not, but if I were, I'm like, that's the one I would get. That's the right computer for me, because I want a computer to do some heavy duty work. I will eventually want to plug stuff in, you know, whatever. And, you know, and I'll be good. Now I did sit there and say, you know, I have yet to succumb to the iPad, and a lot of it has to do for those productivity stuff. Could this be it? You know, could I choose this? Yeah. Could I have my MacBook Pro? And I'm ultimately like, no, probably not, because the MacBook Pro is pretty portable. But you know what I mean? Where I'm like, to me, that's the question. Is MacBook, iPad, which, by the way, is the exact same question that we asked way back when we got our computers, because for Jessie, it was MacBook or iPad. And she ultimately went MacBook. And I think we weren't the only ones to ask that particular question. They weren't selling it to me. They're selling it to people like Jessie, where she's like, I really only have enough money to get one. Which one makes the most sense? And they'll say, get the MacBook. It looks the same. It's the same thickness. It's actually thinner than the first iPad. We have the color options. It has the exact same number of ports as an iPad. It's got the same screen resolution, but it's a little bit bigger. It does run OS X now, and it's got it's got the solid standard drive, solid state. There we go, solid state. Solid state drive, just like an iPad, and it comes with a built-in keyboard. I mean, you know, and they're like, and it's, you know, got special butterfly keys and this haptic touch, and you know what I mean? I'm just like, I don't know. I sit there and say, it's exactly what they said it was. What if we marry these two together? And if we were doing that Brian process again, that's probably what I would say. Is get that. Don't get an iPad. If it's your only one.
Yeah, I agree with that. I actually think it's funny. My thought was I've been thinking it'd be good to get a MacBook Air for a while. I cannot absolutely not justify it yet, so I'm looking for excuses to justify it. I'm trying to figure out how to justify it, because once I can figure out how to justify affording it, then it's just getting it. I took one look at this and said, no, I actually want this one. Because what I liked about it is what I like about the Air is it's this ultra portable thing, and it allows you to do word processing and mobile application development. You can do light photo editing, you know, if you're not doing giant stuff, you know, which I'm not, you know, if you're not doing video editing and you're not doing solid modeling or playing video games, like, yeah, that's cool. The nice part is though, for me, I would sit there and go, that would be the mobile device that I took to, like, when I travel and stuff, so that I can keep working even when I don't have my Mac Mini, because my Mac Mini is this decked out, you know, desktop. And I just I shrug my shoulders and I sit there and go, that device is designed for a couple of different niches. Like you said, people who need something just a little bit more than an iPad.
Yeah, but like not her, much more. She doesn't actually have a desk, right? She works on the couch. She's actually sitting on the couch right now working on a laptop. Like, that's her office.
Right.
She's not going to plug it in. Yes. She's not going to do anything crazy heavy duty. Yeah, I don't know.
Right. And I sit there and go, for me, I would be in the state of, I don't need, you know, I wouldn't be plugging it into monitors. I wouldn't be, it would be my portable device. I would never take it out when I was sitting at a desk. Right. I don't, like, it's the exact same thing. And it's capable of doing, like, I was talking with Keegan Black, and he sat there and went, oh, I want one. I was like, oh, yeah, really? I'm like, even though you do kind of heavier duty stuff, he's like, dude, I would just remote desktop. He goes, he uses it, and he's had the ultra portable laptops for that specific reason, because he's got, you know, the hardware back at home, and he just remote desktops if he needs to do anything heavy duty. And you're like, that's the direction we're going. And Apple is acknowledging that. And I think, and then one of the things they said is that it's this idea that this is a device that's not really designed for today. All the pieces of the puzzle that you're needed for a device with a single port are there to make that ecosystem work. But it's not really designed for everybody. But, and this is the important part, in 5 to 10 years, everything's going to be that way. You're not going to need multiple, you know, you might have laptops that have two or three, USB-C ports on it, but there's not going to be anything else. Like, the hardwired peripheral in general is going the way of the dinosaur. I mean, they're pushing so hard to get away from hardwired stuff, and they're right to do it. Like, to go to wireless communication for everything. Just if you know, instead of putting a USB chip in it, put a Bluetooth LTE BTLE,
BLE,
low energy. There we go. Into the device, and it costs an extra couple of bucks per device. But it's really not that much more per device. And now all of a sudden it's Bluetooth enabled.
Which, by the way, I'm a little shocked they haven't come out with an LTE version yet. And maybe that's what the next gen Air will be.
Yeah, maybe. I think the Air is done.
You think so? I mean, it's weird you're reading about it and you're like, so now it's bigger, thicker, heavier. It's not very Air-like.
Yeah. Apple, I don't know, if you haven't figured this out yet, I'll lay it out for you. Apple, what they do is they let the price of device categories move down as time goes on. And what they do, you know, we talked about this before. They use Moore's Law in order to basically lower the price point of stuff. Every generation, they knock $100 off the iPhone so that their cheapest device is with a subsidy. It's zero down. The MacBook Pros, the older generation stuff gets, you know, becomes cheaper, and then the newest one keeps the high price point. But if they want to really mess with price points, like they've decided that they're not selling the MacBook Airs for enough, for example, what you do is you come up with a completely new category, priced at the price, start price at the high price point that you want, keep around the old category, and then as the new category ages each year and it gets the lower price point, so it gets the tiered price point with the new high price point that they want to keep, then let that the old category just fade away. And that's exactly what they did with the MacBooks. Ironically, they used the Airs to fades the MacBooks out so they could reprice the MacBooks and recategorize it. And now that they've completely gotten rid of the MacBooks as a line, they're going to bring back that naming convention and phase the Airs out. I mean, like, it's, you know, it's just they use these year-long things. And one of the reasons why that's important to study is because oftentimes companies do it completely wrong. They just raise the price, figure everybody will be okay with it, keep the service exactly the same and exactly the same name, and then your stock price drops Netflix because all you do is charge more for the exact same product. And it's reasonable, but that's not how you're supposed to do it. And Apple is a master at raising their prices without upsetting their user base and making people feel like they're just paying more for the same thing. But, okay, I do want to talk about two features of it because I think they're important to the future of the line.
Logo.
Number one, the backlit keyboards, and number two, the logo. So the USB-C is obviously a big deal.
You don't want to talk about
the trackpad.
Okay. Wait, what are they?
Sorry, I was joking about the first two. USB-C
and
the trackpad.
Well, I was like, the keyboard seemed legit to me.
Are the big ones.
But...
Well, it's a novel. It's cool. It looks cool. I think what they were trying to do is trying to soften the blow for people that that it's going to feel different. You know, Apple has had the same design for their keyboards for a long time. They all feel the same across all of their product lineups, and they're changing the feel. I think that's the only reason why they addressed it. It's because they want to explain why it's going to feel different.
That sounds like it's a legitimate innovation. But yeah, I was like, oh, it reduces the whole edge key problem. I'm like, cool. I have never had that problem.
Yeah, that was a problem.
Oh, my bad.
Okay. I guess I don't type enough. I don't know. Or I type enough. I might be the other side. But I think the trackpad's a big deal.
Dude, they're putting that haptic engine
and not necessarily
everywhere, aren't they? Like a year from now, it'll just be everything.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. That's why I think it's worth mentioning, is because that's right now the rumor mill is that is going to be the quote killer feature of
the
success. Well, it's rumor in that Apple hasn't confirmed the obvious yet. You know, it's definitely
the
coming.
Book and the Mac Pro. It's not in the Air because they're fading it out, like you said, which makes sense. Yeah, we're gonna see it in the iPad and the. No, we'll do it in the iPhone first, and then next year will be the iPad. Is that how we roll these things out?
I believe that's the strategy. Yes. What I think is fascinating about this is, do you realize? Okay, so they said it, but they didn't say it. So this new trackpad doesn't move.
Well, from what I can see, it moves a little bit.
Well, okay, when you have a force, it has force sensing, so it moves. But they say it's literally imperceptible. You can't actually, like, not. It's not that it's not imperceptible, but it's like it doesn't have a full trail. But what they said is weird is that it feels like it does.
That's what I've heard. Have you gone and tried one out yet?
Because they're not in Apple stores yet.
The MacBook Pros. No, not yet. Because they were saying you could buy them today.
Oh my gosh. I walked into the store today and didn't play with it. Oh my gosh. I walked in yesterday, I guess.
You can buy it.
Oh, this is going to be upsetting to me. You know what it was? I was looking at the MacBooks and And those are not available till later. So I might have just. I know this is actually really. I know
we had an opportunity to do primary research.
Yeah, I messed it up, dude.
Yeah, because some of the videos I was watching, they were like, "Yeah, you can get them today at the store." That was their whole thing, shipping today. You blew it. Yeah, so apparently from what you've read, what did you find?
That hurt, actually. That hurt a little bit when you said that. From what I've read, they were saying that it feels just like a click because the haptic engine is allowing you to – it's giving tactile feedback that gives it the feeling of a click without actually doing the clicking. Mm. And likewise, it feels different. They have a different feel. Like they said, one of the things is when you push into it, when you do the force push, it has a haptic feedback that makes it, quote, feel like you're pushing into it, and it's actually going deep, even though it's not. Which is interesting. I have no idea how you would do that. But this harkens back to how I said they were going to input haptics for a long time, which is, you know, putting a vibrating motor into the device that allows it to change its frequency, because based on the frequency, you can change how materials feel. For example, you can make glass feel like rocks or concrete.
So this haptic engine would, if you could figure out how to program it or if they enabled it, you could make it feel like any surface.
Not any surface, but a great variety of different surfaces.
Excuse me, the willies.
Yeah.
Think about like sandpaper.
Ugh. Yeah. Yeah, right? I think there is a question about how powerful is the taptic engine? How finite is the control? How good is the vibration? Stuff like that. There are questions that I don't know if they've answered. I would suspect that one of the reasons why Apple hasn't unleashed those different features onto the world yet is because it may not be ready for that. This is just their first
this is like
pass
Touch
at
ID
it.
One. It unlocks the phone.
Exactly.
Cool. We can do a force touch.
They're testing it out. They're making sure it works. I believe this is that technology. It's designed to make you it is a full on haptic feedback using vibrations, good vibrations. So that's exciting. And like I said, the important part about this is not necessarily that it works on the MacBook, but that it's coming to the iPhone next year. That being said, another piece of technology that will be coming to the iPhone next year, that's not true, is USB-C. So John Gruber, who, by the way, nailed it. I think he nailed it because somebody within Apple told him what the price was going to be so he could leak it months before. But, you know, still, he was the first one to call the price of the Apple Watch. I'm gonna say
that's credit.
It is what it is. But he wrote an article today or yesterday talked about the USB-C, which is the new standard for USB style of connector that goes with the USB 3.1 standard. Has some cool features. It can charge up to 20 volts, not just 5 volts, which is a pretty big deal, because what it allows you to do is it allows you to charge full-time, full-size laptops or ultra-portables at the very least at the speed of, like, you know, the mag strip. So this is what allows them to put all of your different connection abilities into a single port. It's got 10 gigabyte per second transfer speeds, which for those of you who don't know is fast. It is 10 times faster than what Google Fiber can deliver. So
how does
that's
it
pretty good.
Compare to like Thunderbolt or something?
Let me me check. Thunderbolt. Jeez, what's that called? France. It's not. It's 10 Gbps as well. On paper, at least, Thunderbolt does beat USB. Thunderbolt offers a 10 gigabit per second transfer rate compared with super speed USB 5 gigabolt. That's the old one. But
so it's fast.
Yeah, it's quite fast. It's very fast. It's
does
on
this mean
par
Thunderbolt's on the way out?
I think it actually... yeah. Yeah, in a big way. Thunderbolt was short-lived. Yeah. But... One of the things that they were saying is that, or what John Gruber was saying, was that amongst these cool technological innovations that it has, it had a parallel development to the Lightning Bolt connector that charges, that plugs into your iPhones, and it shares a couple of things features in common, specifically the reversibility of it. You can flip.
I don't have to worry about the way. Like, yeah. All right.
I don't know. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. It's funny. I would say I didn't think it was that big of a deal, except my iPhone, one of the pins on my iPhone is faulting out with one of my cables, and it only works when it's oriented one way. All the rest of my cables work. But that one cable, I've got to have it oriented the right way, and it does drive me crazy when I put it in upside down and I have to switch it. Scott! Why do I keep putting it backwards? This is so stupid.
Like first world. That's like one percenter problems.
Yeah. It really is. But I guess, you know, I get it. I get why. Well, and what's so frustrating about it is it's like in retrospect, it just is. It should have never been designed the way that it was. It always should have been reversible. It's easy to make it reversible. Why the heck didn't we just make it reversible? But, you know, it's okay. It happens. But the important part about this is that this is not an Apple-only standard. This is an international standard. This is the new USB. What's that one company? Google launched their new Pixel Chromebook on Tuesday. One of the big announcements was, guess what it had? USB 3.1 with a USB-C plug in it. For charging and data output. It's also got a couple of USB 3.0s because they're really cool. So it's already, you know, already quote unquote, the competition is incorporating it
That's
into
good
their
for
hardware. It is. It's very good for everybody. It's nice to see Apple moving that way. The other big deal about this is it's small enough where it will work with most mobile handheld devices, whether tablets or phones. So the idea is that as Samsung and everybody else start to come out with their new devices, they'll be incorporating USB-C into the device. And so there's a really good chance that it will become, in the next 5 to 10 years, the de facto charging port for all mobile devices, new laptops. Okay. And once it does... It will, you know, it'll incentivize. Then SanDisk can move over to a complete line of USB, you know, C jump drives. And all you would need is the occasional converter to go from USB C to USB A. And it's reverse compatible. The center pins on USB-C are data and the outer pins are 5-volt bus. So you can actually just take the, I think it's 12 wires that come off of USB-C and just pluck out the wires you need and solder it directly to a USB. So you can very cheaply make a conversion cable. You'll be able to buy them from China for $30.
For $79.
Exactly. Theirs does more. It does video transfer and power and one USB. It's much bigger deal than that. But the big deal here is that Apple made it. Apple designed this plug. And then they secretly gave it to the USB, the International USB Committee guys. What's their name? International USB Commission? Is that what it's called? IEC? Internal, yeah, whatever, doesn't matter. I don't know why I care that much. But, yeah, they secretly gave it to him. But because for political reasons, if you remember back in the day when the when we were deciding on the style for the nano SIM cards, and there was a big hubbub between Apple and Nokia because Nokia had forever been the guys that basically said, hey, this is what we want, and everybody else went along with it. And it became a big deal when Apple supplanted them and got their design picked. And so to avoid the politics of all of that, Apple designed it, gave it to the USB guys, and didn't tell anybody, so that Samsung and Google and everybody wouldn't like balk until it was too late. And Apple got the standard that they wanted, which I think is fascinating. But yeah, it's cool. It's really cool. It's cool to see that. It's good to see it because, you know, I think it's a good sign that Apple wants to be that. They want to have it be a standard. And
yeah, no, interoperability is good, and that means it'll work on a bunch of accessories, which is also good. Haven't heard any announcements from HP saying printers will work with it, but that's cool.
Well, see, but that's the nice part about it. All you need is a new cable. All you need is a little converter cable.
Well, I guess that's why
your old USB stuff.
They haven't announced any cables. Like,
oh.
I guess. That's cool. Of course, all their stuff. Back to the other point is they're all Wi-Fi enabled now. So they're like,
right.
You don't actually need a cable. You just plug it into the wall, connect it to your router, you're good to go.
Yeah, exactly. Which I think that's the point. And I think that's the beauty of the Bluetooth standard is that between Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, we've kind of got it sorted.
True. Very true. There wasn't a Touch ID on it. So no Apple Pay.
Nope. But you know what does have Apple Pay, James? The Apple Watch. It's that time of the show. Play the sound effect.
I just heard the Inception sound. You did not.
Okay. I did not. Yeah, that was exciting. that was great. This is the best produced. The Apple
quiet
Watch
the entire time.
Was yeah. Yeah. The Apple Watch came out or was announced.
All right, dude, important question. Which one
pricing...
are you getting?
Ooh.
I mean, are you gonna tease us or are you gonna let me know?
Fitbit Surge.
No, seriously. Or are you deciding to go with the Pebble?
There was a couple hours. I'm serious. There was a couple hour period where I was really looking at the Surge after they made the announcement.
10 p.m. on Monday.
No. This is 3 o'clock Monday afternoon. I started getting into it. I made a little bit of a discovery that I was not pleased with and wanted to seriously take a look at it. That being said, I'm going to be getting what everybody else in my particular demo will be getting, which is the stainless steel with the leather classic wrist strap
one, right?
Band. No, it's the band is black, but it's the standard stainless steel.
Yeah.
Color.
They only make one black leather. It's like just like the standard.
Yes.
Wristwatch band.
It's the classic yeah, yeah. Buckle. Yeah.
Yeah, that one does look cool.
That one and
if I were to get a dressy one, that would be
it's everybody. Yeah, the biggest deal about it is it's the lightest of all of the watches.
Wait, it's the aluminum, right? But you said stainless steel.
No. Correct. Aluminum is not the lightest. The aluminum watches are actually heavier than the stainless steel watches. It's blowing my mind, man. Sure? I don't get why that is. Yes. I'm positive. I looked into this a bunch because it didn't make any sense. The plastic wristbands are dramatically heavier than the leather bands. Doesn't make any sense. I'm so confused. I think what happens is the stainless steel, for whatever reason, they decided that they could use a lot less material to get the same structural strength, so it's just much thinner than the aluminum. For whatever reason, they wanted more aluminum involved than aluminium, as Sir Johnny Ives would say. That one's a pretty slick looking watch. Obviously,
are you also going to get
an elastomer
band for exercise?
Probably.
Okay.
I would say the nice part about the stainless steel is the stainless steel dresses up and down. It's got the sapphire quartz. That's stupid. It's got the sapphire glass screen, so it's more rugged than the aluminum sport. It's got the wearing leather while running is going to be weird. Yeah. It's gonna.
They're gonna sell a bazillion of those, aren't they?
But wearing. Yeah, I personally am predicting that's actually so this is what I'm gonna say, on my predictions of how well the Apple Watch is gonna sell. I think the stainless steel watch the two types of stainless steel watches that are gonna sell the best are the black classic buckle and the stainless steel band. The expensive stainless steel one.
Nice.
And then, oh, yeah, it's a good looking.
Like
it's
$1,000. Does look nice.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's $300 more for that band. It's ridiculous. But
if money wasn't an issue, that would be, I would get, honestly, if money did not matter, I wouldn't get the gold because everything I own is silver white, and so I would go the stainless steel with the metal stainless steel band, and I'd get one of the plastic ones for philastomer or whatever product material it is, for like working out. It'd be like white band probably.
I would probably do that too. The fact that you can switch the bands in and out allows me to say, you know, maybe ask for the nice stainless steel one for Christmas, because you can.
Yeah,
and it will also be interesting to see what,
because I know for me, I had like a regular watch that it was the metal band one, and I liked it. It dresses up nice.
The thing that I've also had to remind myself is that everybody and their brother is going to come out with a third party band that can, you know, that will, so you know, you don't need to stock up on every band that you need from Apple and pay the Apple tax.
That's true. That's very true.
You know,
so why don't you just go for the really plastic one or whatever, and then get another leather one when it comes out? Save $300.
I don't know. Well, it's not. You wouldn't save. That's part of it. Is that the leather one? The leather with the classic buckle is only like $50 more than the flows.
My point was, if you're gonna get both, get the cheaper of the two, and then buy your second watch band.
Maybe. I don't know. So one of the things I have decided is I am not going to pre-order it.
Really?
I'm gonna walk in and try it all. Yeah.
Por qué, man?
Because. So this is the time, part of the show where we come to criticisms. I think that the so 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I stumbled upon. I'm reading everything I can, man. I was reading so many articles; it was ridiculous.
Because you're excited,
I was incredibly excited. Oh man, I was like losing my mind. I was like, I couldn't believe that I couldn't spend my money yet. I was ready to go, and then I looked at the price of. And then an art tech blog, so one of the one of the tech blogs came out with an article talking about how long the battery lasts and really specifying the battery stuff. I was like, okay, I'm curious about this. This is going to be really interesting. And then I read and I read and read, and then I saw something terrible. Terrible. The battery will only last 7 hours with the heart rate monitor on.
Okay.
And all of a sudden I realized that they lied the first time they talked about the phone or about the watch. That they sold a feature, and they have since changed the definition of that feature. It still has a heart rate monitor. It still works while you're working out. But it is not an all-day continuous heart monitoring. It's specifically for periods when you're working out. And I have wanted a continuous all-day heart monitor for a really long time.
Why all day versus and I kind of, working out?
Because so there's a couple of different ways to calculate how many calories your body is using. The most accurate way of doing it is actually doing breath analysis, measuring CO2, O2, and H2O input output, because it's a pretty simple calculation to say how much, you know, as you're quote unquote, as you're burning fat, you're literally burning it, and it, and you can do the stoichiometric calculation to figure out how much you actually burned, and then you can work out the calories based on that.
I that's, burned the that's acorn the when most I was accurate in high school, way to, I understand.
Exactly. And the calorimeter.
I don't know.
The bomb calorimeter, that's what it is. Yeah, so that's a simple thing. Well, there's a really, really solid correlation between how much your CO2 and everything you're breathing out, and what your heart rate is doing. And so you can build, if you are tracking heart pace, you can assume, you may use certain calculations, use certain equations, and you can get a pretty accurate guess to how much what your calorie burn rate is just based on heart rate. And then you can go to different ways of projecting it, like coming up with height, weight, stuff like that, and coming up with your more basic BMI calculations, how most people do it. You can adjust those things for specific types of workouts, because you know if you weigh X and you travel Y, you can literally calculate the work and then kind of back out how many calories it requires. We it's funny, when we actually do like calorie, how much energy the body's using, we use these very gross, you know, calculations. And
gross means simplified, right?
They're big, you know. It's sort of, we take the big picture of it and say, therefore you must have burnt X. But the point is that with a heart rate monitor, with an accurate heart rate monitor, you can get really accurate calorie information without any other without very few other specifics. You don't really need to know what sort of activity you do during the day, how much you work out, stuff like that. I was excited about that. I want that quantified information. And there are products on the market like the Basis, now belonging to Intel, or the Fitbit Surge, that do that specifically, and their batteries last for days, and you can control your music, and you can get notifications, and it'll tell you the time. And to me, that was the killer feature. That was the thing that I've wanted for a long time. I'd put off a purchase of Basis and the Surge specifically because, and other heart rate monitors, specifically because I was waiting for the Apple Watch, which had the all-day continuous heart rate monitoring, which they said it would have. And then all of a sudden you find out that it actually won't have that. And I sat there, and, you know, it's funny because it's expensive. It's an expensive toy to buy just so that I don't have to pull my phone out of my pocket. And this was, you know, when we talk about, what's the word? The psychology of persuasion. That was my big pillar. And then I had all these other little pillars that were being built up around it, and we pulled that pillar out from underneath it. And because I understand the psychology of persuasion, that upset me that they pulled the pillar out from me. And I sat there and I went, you know what? No, I know what I want. I don't care. It's not just the fashion statement. It's not just that it's an Apple Watch. It's not. I actually want what I want, and I want to make sure that I'm getting the right thing. So I immediately, well, not immediately, but as it like settled in that I would not be getting an Apple Watch because it's not what I wanted, I decided, well, then I'm not going to wait till the end, until the end of April to buy what I really want. And I, because, man, I was ready to spend some money.
Okay.
I was so ready for it to launch that day. So I seriously started doing research on the Surge. Like, which one do I want? Like, how I was expecting to be wearing one today. Reading a bunch of reviews and stuff. And most reviews are pretty – it's ugly. It's big. But it works pretty well. It does what you want it to do. And I sat there and went, well, you know what? I won't look like an Apple sheep if I do true. That. So that's, you know, it's got some pluses and minuses on there. Sometimes it's cool to be an Apple sheep. Cause people, you know, so you watched the video that we talked about last week about the four horsemen of tech, and one of his whole thing about Apple being a luxury product, and the whole point of a luxury is to communicate to other people at a moment's notice that you have a lot of resources so that you can take care of them and your mutual offspring. That's the entire point, is to convince people you're rich so you can have a mate. I mean, like, that's a benefit to having a really expensive, useless watch. And I as he would say, it's the point of having an expensive, useless watch. But at the same time, you know, whatever. I guess what my point is that so I started looking at these, you know, at the Surge and everything. And then I read a couple of reviews from like people with more medical technology and stuff. And they sat there and went, they were like, actually, the Surge is impressively accurate when you're resting or just walking. Like it's not perfect, but it's pretty close. They said the problem is the minute you start working out, it is just all over the place. It's super inaccurate. And then all of a sudden I had this really sinking feeling in my chest as I realized I'm finally actually doing the research that I could have done a while ago but didn't because I figured I didn't need to. And I'm realizing that the product I want doesn't actually exist yet. And it was just heartbreaking because it's like it doesn't matter now. Like it, and I actually went through like a couple. I was a roller coaster of emotion. I went through like a couple of hour period where I was like, why would I even upgrade from my Fitbit? Like, what's the point of all of this? Like, what is it? And then I started thinking back to my experience with the Moto 360 and remembering how much I liked the Moto 360, even though it didn't have a heart rate monitor. And so I started to come back around to wanting to waste my money on an Apple Watch. So I'm
but
I think I really do want to actually try it on. I probably won't. I probably will go to the store when it's launched, try it on, see it, do the shopping thing, and probably order it then. Like, I'm not going to – I doubt I'm going to wait a really long time. It's not like what I did with my iPhone where I was like, I'm going to see if I really want it or not and then discovered I didn't actually need it, which, by the way, I cracked my screen yesterday. It's like a hairline crack across the surface, and it's enough where I don't even notice it when I'm using the phone, but it's the beginning of the end has started. And so I have to figure out how to make it to September without shattering the screen the rest of the way. Yeah, right.
Whatever that's called, a protector? Screen protector?
Yeah, I'm gonna get a screen protector and just hope that it holds together for me. Because it's not bad at all. I mean, like, it's like at certain angles when the screen's on, you can see it because there's a little bit of distortion. But if you're looking at it straight on, it looks like a hair on the screen when you notice it. That's a little bit because honestly at this point, I think I would just go on eBay and buy a 5C, and just it's the same exact phone, same exact hardware, and just say, you know, I just got to make it to September. because it would be difficult to just drop, because, you know, with T-Mobile and everything, to just outright buy an iPhone 6 Plus with 128 gigs and a stainless steel Apple Watch.
That's real.
That would be hard to do. But I guess what I come back to is, so, you know, it's not as compelling of a device as I thought it was, but I don't know, for me personally, it's still a compelling device. I'm still excited about it. I want it. Obviously, you know. Yeah, I'm still very stoked. So
how come I have to lower my you're not going for the gold one?
Remember how I just said I can't afford a $700 watch and a $1,200 phone at the same time? Technically, I could. It just wouldn't be wise.
But remember how much that would communicate to potential mates.
Whereas with a $10,000 watch, I cannot actually do that. That is outside of my means by a fair margin. Yeah, that's it's expensive, man. It's impressive, but it's expensive. John Gruber nailed it, dude. He said 10K.
Yeah.
I think if I was interested
in that gold and the red, I'd probably do the Pebble. It looks exactly the same for $350.
Exactly the same? I don't know if it looks exactly the same.
The display's obviously different, but...
that's it. After that, it's exactly the same. Precisely. Yeah. I have a feeling they'll be somewhat different. Yeah, so what do you think about that? I mean, you know, the price point.
I wouldn't mind seeing all of them on a chart, because I think when you start to stack up all your different options, it's not, like, crazy, crazy expensive, which is weird to say. Right? So, like, here, let me actually.
Well, they range between 10 and 17. The red modern buckle 42mm is the most expensive at 17K. Yeah,
which is also rose gold.
I know, that's the one I want.
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to figure out is if I go Apple Watch, so that's the stainless steel, and I get the big one, if I get the black one, 42mm, that's $1,100. It's about the same price as the new MacBook. Just insane.
I know.
I guess it is still like 10 times the price. But dude, I don't know. There's a part of me that's like, I get it. It's gold, and there's like $4,000 worth of gold in the thing, and so that's gonna, you know, obviously, given.
Yeah, it's funny watching everybody trying to figure out how much gold it is based on those videos where they're like showing it being milled out and stuff, and like trying to figure out how much gold is actually in it. Just wait till it comes out and weigh it. Jeez.
Yeah.
But I think it will answer that question like day one. They might not be able to afford one, but
yeah, well, they'll buy a cheap one, tell you how much that one weighs, and then approximate it from there. There'll be some sponsor out there that'll pay for them to do it. I guess it's obviously expensive.
Yeah, I'd say that's a pretty.
I thought it was interesting how they're making it limited.
Well, I think they're making it limited just so that, you know, it can be limited so that it can sell out.
So it could sell out. So let's see here. We've got, so $10,000 is rose gold with the plastic band.
I know. That's so ugly. Like, who does that? I love it. It's like the little dimple is gold. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Well, they make the crown has a little white thing in there, which is cool. Let's see here. The black one's pretty sweet. I like
Apple
the
Watch edition.
Let's see here. They've got a couple yellow golds. Mostly rose gold, looks like. And then let's see that the ladies one, the 38 gray modern buckle, which looks sweet. Is that one 17? And they go back down to 15. And then yeah, what is it? The yellow gold with the bright modern red one for 17 grand. That does look cool. That blue one would probably be the one I'd get though.
I think I would go with the 42 18 carat the black band. The
black band looks pretty nice.
I know. That's a good looking watch.
I'd probably just
go
blue because I like blue. But I mean, it's shades essentially is what we're talking about there. They do look nice. I think that I'm not fully certain what their intentions are with this. I mean, it's totally different. Right, than the other ones, not only in price point, but the way they advertise it and show it. And it sounds like from the way that they, I mean, the quantities that they make are totally different. I don't know. It's totally different than all the others.
Yeah.
It's clearly not one of the most expensive watches out there, which is also interesting.
Yeah. I wonder how much research Apple did. I'm sure they did a lot, but I wonder how much research Apple did on those second or those third party modifiers that build, you know, an iPhone with a gold case and diamond encrusted, and to see how many of those are actually sold. Now, I wonder if they looked into that and asked the question, you know, when they're looking at a market. I personally, it's funny. I've everybody's been asking, who's this watch for? Who needs it? How hard is it actually to pull out your phone from your pocket? And I think the tech echo chamber has had a hard time trying to answer that question. And I think part of it has to do with the fact that it's a bunch that there are a majority white American males, young males in that Weird. Are tech bloggers. And I think the answer is pretty simple. If you know anything about China, Chinese people love gold. It is incredibly fashionable over there. And like they have stores where like you walk by the store and it's just there's gold everywhere, like solid gold stuff, like tens of, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of gold in these stores, and people just go in there, and it's a very, 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 very fashionable to have gaudy gold stuff. And you know, more and at the same time, women keep their phones in their purses, in their bags, and it's kind of nice to be able to have a fashionable watch you can glance at and see your time. And it is important to note that the Apple Watch Edition, the most expensive watch that they sell, I was actually wrong about this when I was saying it, now that I'm looking at it, that red, the red 18 karat yellow gold case with the bright red modern buckle at $17,000 is a 38 millimeter watch. It's the smaller watch. It's designed for women. There is a tremendous amount of disposable income in the wealthier parts of China. There are millions of people that can afford this watch without even thinking about it in China. And there are a lot of women who will find this incredibly fashionable. And I think it's worth pointing out that the first magazine that had Apple Watch on the cover was Vogue China. I mean, that is a huge market for them. They are really going to push that. And then I read somewhere that, and I don't know how great these numbers are, but I think in principle they convey the message appropriately. But the profit margin, the estimated profit margin on an Apple Watch edition, is going to be in the ballpark of like 100 to 200 iPhones.
Huh.
They sell one Apple Watch and it will have the same, like, you know, I mean, let's just say it has the same profit margin as 100 iPhones. and then let's sell 50,000 of them. All of a sudden, you're in the ballpark of it's like adding an extra 5 million iPhones to your bottom line. You don't need to sell very many Apple Watches to really make it a compelling device to include into your portfolio. Just from a profit margin perspective, which, you know, Apple is unashamedly about. And I think you – I am of the belief that you'll see fewer gold watches in America than everybody's predicting. Kanye West might wear one just because it's Kanye, but I wouldn't be surprised if he went with the stainless steel too. I actually think the elite in, you know, America will go with the stainless steel. If they go with an Apple Watch, they'll go with the stainless steel as well. By and large, it's not just people, young middle upper class Americans like me that'll go with the stainless steel. I think even your upper class, which technically I am a part of. Wait, we already covered that on this show. James says it's not true. But anyways, you know, the point is, I think you'll see a lot of people wearing that for the first year. And then as you come into Christmas, you'll really start to see the sport start to take off. And finally, you'll see the aluminum start to pull ahead, even though it's cheaper. I think your early adopters are going to go with the stainless steel in America. Your early adopters in China are going to go with the gold. And they're going to sell enough of them to keep the entire product category line alive for another year. Wait till they hit a massive advertising campaign pre-Christmas for the stainless steel sport. Oh my goodness, it's gonna come off the hinges. And as if you were reading Mac Daily News at all, Steve Jack pointed out that the most fashion forward, the biggest names are all going to be wearing the 18 karat gold Apple Watch. As a fashion statement and a I'm richer than you statement. But if you want the exact same technology and capabilities, you can get that for something that anybody can afford. And it's a pretty compelling argument, I think. I guess my long and short of this is I think they're going to sell a ton of these watches, man.
Yeah, I agree. It's a little weird, like, you think about the most expensive watches, usually you don't know what the prices are of them. You know, like, rough estimates. And that's what's interesting about this one. Yes. Like, we all know what the price is.
Right. Well, yeah, especially because, one of the reasons why you don't know what a watch is worth is because it's kind of like a car. It's negotiable. And these ones are clearly being positioned as not that. You're going to pay everybody who buys, X, Y, and Z are going to pay the same. Unless you're buying it secondhand. I can't wait to find out where they're going to be selling them. My plan, I'm going to put on one of my nice suits, dude. I'm going to look fly, and I am going to go and ask to try one on. I'm going to go in there looking like I got money so I can try it on and wear it.
And then you'll bust out your iPhone with a cracked screen and take a picture. They'll be on you.
Yeah, maybe. Oh yeah, my poverty.
Actually, they'll be super nice
even on my best days.
They don't, you know what I mean. That'll be fun.
Well, it's funny. I have this memory of going
like they're not buying one.
Exactly. Yeah, these guys can afford it. Well, except I just have this really distinct memory of going ring shopping, and I did it. I went one day to this jeweler after work, just wearing my normal like engineering getup, and this was years ago, obviously. But I went in and got really, really nice service and everything. I was just wearing a button up and slacks. It wasn't even a big deal. Went when my girlfriend at the time. Was up with her to go and to the same jeweler, same everything, but it was like a Saturday, and we were both in our fraternity sorority sweatshirts,
Yeah.
Just looking kind of Oh, and like could not get the time of day. It's amazing how big of a difference it makes if you look like you don't have any money. I think Tesla.
Big mistake.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, like full on. Big mistake. Yeah. You know, they were right in the long run, but. But yeah. Yeah, I figure if I go in looking like I got a little bit of cash, they'll even if I don't buy it, they'll. Except at the same time, you don't want to go and look like you got too much money, because then they might want you to make the decision right there and then, and like, you know, go into high pressure. Oh, this deal's not going to last. I know it's going to last. It's the exact same price as this one on the website.
No, I wouldn't do that.
No. I got to think about it.
Can I get it engraved?
Yeah, right.
No. clearly, this isn't the right product for you. All right, man. Sounds like it was touch and go for a few hours, but you're still on the super pumped. You're going to try it, but we all know you're going to get it. It's really just a matter of which one. That's good. This is crazy, dude. We're like an hour and 50 minutes in.
Was there anything else to talk about?
How pumped are you about the new Star Wars standalone film? Rogue One. Dude, they're totally doing the whole Avengers thing. Marvel thing. Avengers, Marvel thing, yeah. Which, I mean, I guess it's the same studio, so, you know, why not? It seems to be working. I'm a little nervous.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? Yeah, me too. I mean, you know what it is?
No.
Is Star Wars just isn't what we thought it was. You can't... I have to let go of what Star Wars was.
Ah.
Or at least sandbox episode 1-3, or episode, you know, 4-6 into its own thing, and then just forget about it. Like, forget about, you know, the...
Well, not necessarily a reboot, about what but it's it was. Just its own thing.
Exactly.
Because that was at least a nice part about all the superhero stuff. You're like, oh, it's a reboot, whatever. And it was easy to let go of the other one and restart.
It doesn't bother me that they're making a new, you know, that Batman Superman. It's completely different, like, you know, subplot for Batman, even though there's really only one Batman. You know, like that doesn't, you know, Michael Keaton, obviously.
obviously.
I have a hard time. Michael Keaton and
Jack Nicholson.
What's his name?
Dude, I don't know.
No. The other one. The other Batman. The real Batman.
George Clooney? Help me out here.
No.
Val Kilmer?
It's messed up, Doc.
Not cool.
What's his name?
Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, that's the best part of Lego Movie. Bruce Wayne, the billionaire, like who could go? The billionaire who has, you know, all these business connections. And Batman, wow, he sounds really cool. He sounds like a good guy. I should totally meet him. Oh man,
that was a great movie. Hopefully, this turns out to be just as great.
That was such a good movie.
So yeah, Star Wars, dude.
Yeah, well, they're making another Lego movie. Another Frozen movie.
Why not?
They're now officially making four Star Wars movies. It'll be, I'm trying to keep. I remembered one of my resolutions this year. I don't remember where I was looking at it. Was to be less negative and angry about movies. And
that sounds familiar.
I read this announcement, and I was like, I'm going to be happy about this because I don't want to be annoying. So I'm trying to be optimistic.
I'm a little nervous. Why did they choose May 26th? Why could they not move it up 22 days?
Yeah.
I feel like that was the biggest missed opportunity in the world.
Yeah. I completely agree with that assessment.
You know, it's like one thing if it was like, oh, we got to do it in June or July. But like, you're already in the month. You're already there.
Yeah.
You're telling me you can't work just a little bit harder?
What year is that?
2017.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That is so far from now. I can't believe we're talking about a movie 2 years from now. At the same time, the new Avengers movie is in 3 months. Oh, or I know. 2 months.
That one snuck up on me, and I'm so happy it did.
I know. Right? Yeah, thank goodness, because it felt like forever last time we talked about it. May the 4th is a Thursday. You're right. How is that possible?
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
I hope they realize their mistake and fix it by the time it comes around.
I know there's still time, but that does seem, yeah, that seems like, you see, that's the thing that makes me nervous, James. That's obvious to anybody who cares at all about Star Wars, and they missed it by 20 days. Oh, yeah, goodness gracious.
Totally.
Who's the actress that's going to be the main chick?
I don't know. I didn't recognize her.
It's okay, I'm going to IMDb it.
She's in The Theory of Everything, which I haven't seen yet, but I want to.
Rogue Squadron, is that what it is?
Okay, I got one more while you're looking it up. Okay. Apparently Giga-Ohm is shutting down. I love Giga-Ohm. I follow a lot of their writers. It's like, it's sad because I think they did a good job writing, and I followed a few of them, and we have talked about a lot of their articles on this show. Pretty much anything that was related to solar energy or auto from my end was from Giga-Ohm. a lot of stuff on writing was also from them. So I'm kind of bummed about that, but it's also kind of shaken up the rest of the industry. You know, like, they're like, oh man, are all of us in trouble? What's going on? Sounds like it was more just like a mismanagement on their end of their finances. But yeah, kind of crazy. Big institution. Yeah. Boom.
Did you read Mac Daily News take on it? They were basically saying that back last year, Giga-Ohm contacted them and said, please stop. No. Is that who we're talking about?
Yeah, Giga-Ohm.
Yes. They said they contacted them and were basically like, please stop stealing our content and claiming it as your own on your website. And Mac Daily News is like, we link to your articles all the time. We always say, we always give you credit. We always have a link. We explicitly, like, we don't claim that your content is ours at all. And we drive a ton of traffic to your site.
Number one article on my personal blog so far, lifetime, is the article that Mac Daily News featured. That's weird that Giga-Ohm would. I mean, on one hand, I get it. On the other hand, you're like, really? That's what they do.
I'm not sure what the word I'm clearly looking for short-sighted. Yeah, we were confused because, as you'd imagine, most sites appreciate the traffic we send their way. Some of our readers subsequently asked where Giga-Ohm went, and we told them Giga-Ohm asked to be removed. Again, it's simply inexplicable. Of course, our little site alone didn't kill Giga-Ohm, but with decisions like that, just imagine what else is going on there. It's no surprise that they're defunct today. To the Giga-Ohm executive, that was a little bit of scrubbing. Not exactly. To the Giga-Ohm executive bot who threatened us last August, enjoy your pink slip if you haven't already moved on to killing your next site.
Really, that was in August?
May you someday get a clue.
They, around that same time frame, last year, they wrote a, how did they do it? They published some paid content, and it wasn't entirely clear like that it was paid content by the NSA. Promoting, they were like, essentially it was a job posting, they're like, from an article standpoint, not a big deal. You know, it wasn't like, you know what I mean? They're like, it was pretty boring. It was just talking about how great it is to work for the NSA. Right. They're like, but it was sponsored for and paid for the NSA, and it wasn't super upfront to begin with, and it was the NSA. and they were like, yeah, that was, the shark was jumped for me when that happened. And
yeah.
So it sounds like a bunch of editorial things changed or happened last fall. And crazy.
I think they decided that BuzzFeed was killing them, and they wanted to do something about it.
Oops. Yeah. So from what I understand, we're cool. Not that we were, not that we're making a living off of this yet, but you should check your email inbox. I have some ideas. And
nice. Yeah, dude, we're gonna be, by the end of the year, we'll have done our 200th episode.
We really should have figured out how to.
Dude, I was right. Dude, it was so funny. I was at dinner today. Somehow it came up, and we were talking about how long people in our family how different cousins, how long they've been dating their significant others, and our sister, she's like, yeah, I mean, like, you know, they've been dating for this long. I was like, no, it's been longer than that, because they met the day that we did our, that James and I did our first podcast. She's like, yeah, so that's what, like a year, year and a half ago? Lisa, we're about to do our 180th episode. And she goes, wow, so like over 2 years. Lisa, how many weeks are in a year? We're coming up into, we're over 3 years into this. It's crazy. So yeah, the fact that we haven't monetized it yet is admirable.
That's what it is. We value the relationship with our listeners.
Exactly. You know what? If the CIA or the NSA wanted to pay us at this point,
take it. Cool.
Take it.
Cool beans.
You know, whatever.
We're in. Those would be big beans to us.
Exactly. Yeah. If there was a couple pennies, we'll do it.
Yeah.
We'll work at it. Nah. This net neutrality is terrible. Comcast is the best.
Comcast is the best. Oh man, that's what we should do. See, this is why I will never get advertisers. Like, just like, we should do like SNL style fake ads. They're just totally wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, all right, dude. Anything else we want to talk about? We are.
Yeah, really, really quickly, I'm going to mention this. YouTube has a now supports 360 degree video. But the real cool effect, it's worth clicking on the link when you have higher bandwidth, because it's kind of cool. When you go to YouTube, they have a little controller that allows you to basically control. You know, you can grab and hold and look around as the video plays, and it, you know, it's kind of like a Google Video or what's it called. And you can watch it. I have been told two things. Number one, it is way cooler when you have you use it on your Android phone.
Yeah, you can actually move your phone.
The YouTube app actually supports it with the gyroscope. Yes, you look around. And also, can't wait for it to be a with, you know, work with your various head goggles.
Right. Yeah, no, I saw that and I got very excited about it because I used when we were listing a bunch of apartments, I used it for virtual tours, not the video, but the image, 3D imaging stuff, the Google Spheres. And I mean, it took a while to sit around, and you got to take 360 degree photos, and, you know, so it's a photo, and it stitches them all together. And I would do one for each room, and then those would be uploaded online, and I would connect each of them and make sure all the connections worked. I mean, it took a while to do. But people thought it was awesome, and it worked really well to give a virtual tour of it. So I saw this and was like, oh man, that'd be sweet to be able to let people, you know, again, you can walk through, and then people can look at the different various parts of it as well. I think it's neat. It's the future.
Yeah.
And, in last week's episode, we had that video of the Unreal Engine, and it's pretty cool, man.
Like I said, dude, it's about to get unreal.
Yeah, very cool. Cool stuff. All right, dude. That's awesome.
We made it in the same day that we started. Barely.
Just switching the volume stuff. All right, I did that now. Cool. All right, everybody. Thank you for joining this Apple show. We really appreciate it. And as a reminder, you're listening to episode 181. It's about Apple. And don't forget to check out all of our Apple show notes at furloughbros.com. It'll be episode 181 again. And my name is James Furlough, my Apple fanboy brother who is born of the same mother, is Matthew Furlough. And so I tried to say that as white as I can. Did it work? Okay.
Yeah, you succeeded.
So we will talk next time. Thank you.